Hi and welcome. I'm Robert Scanlon and I'm here with Gabrielle Reyes from HotYogaDoctor.com and QuickFitYoga.com. Welcome, Gabrielle. Good to have you here.
Hi. Hi, Robert. Did you tell them that we're married?
Well, you just did. Did you tell them that I'm actually the webmaster of those two websites?
You just did.
Anyway, that's moving right along. We're here to have a conversation where, as I understand it, you're going to drop in some nuggets that folks are going to be able to take away and use in their hot yoga or Bikram yoga practice. And it doesn't really matter whether they're just starting out, whether they're a regular for some years, or whether they're super advanced. I'm certain there's something in our conversation we have lined up today that they will be able to take away and will make a big difference to their practice. I know we've got a fairly broad spectrum of topics to cover, so I just wondered if there's anything you wanted to add to that.
Oh, well, as you said, I would expect by the end of the conversation that we'll be able to distill enough things for people to be able to take away and get benefit from their very next practice. And of course, I'm really excited and delighted to be able to share that with you and with everybody. And I really particularly want to express my appreciation right now for the kind of participation that I get from the whole community out there through the Hot Yoga Doctor forum and through personal emails and the blogs. And it's just really lovely to be part of this community. So thank you very much.
Yes, I would echo that. It's wonderful. And thank you to everybody for making the contributions that they are. It's really beautiful to see it coming alive. I suppose we should probably explain our funny accents as well, just before we get into some of the real stuff. We're not in the Northern Hemisphere, are we? We're located where? I must remember now. That's right, the Southern Hemisphere. Yes, we are Antipodeans, or otherwise known as Australians. But having said that, we have some of the more popular hot yoga websites in the world. So we're very happy to be servicing anybody. We don't mind what continent they're on, as long as they're into hot yoga or Bikram yoga. Would that be right?
Absolutely.
Alrighty, let's get right into it then anyway, because I'm sure that people are hanging out to hear your words of wisdom. And I thought I'd start out with something very general, actually, in this grilling of the Hot Yoga Doctor. I'm curious to know...
I'm just rolling up my sleeves.
I'm curious... Well, I thought grilling was appropriate, a hot grilling, you know. Anyway, moving right along. Why do you think that yoga actually helps our lifestyle? Is it really an antidote to the modern world? I guess there's two questions in there for you.
And if you don't mind, I'll answer the second one first. Mm-hmm. And I would say in the broadest of terms, yes, to the fact that it really is an antidote to the modern world. These days, and paradoxically, we do actually run more sedentary lifestyles, yet we happen to be busier than ever. Just go figure. We've got busy minds and busy bodies, but the busyness is more about the mind than the body, rushing from one place to another, not necessarily using our bodies in a well-rounded way. So how does the yoga really help? How does it fit into our lifestyle? Because we tend to have to schedule things to fit into our lifestyle, scheduling a yoga class really does make a difference for us. And paradoxically, yes, as we do tend to be able to find the space that we need in our lives by scheduling in the yoga. As Westerners, not many of us really have the lifestyle where we kind of get up in the morning at dawn and hop onto a yoga mat. So really what the yoga is allowing us to do in our lives is to, and if I can use a few well-worn phrases, stop and smell the roses or take a personal time out or another one, gaining the space between the thoughts. Or the last one I'll consider is basically the one about the monkey mind, how you may have heard that one, Robert, before about the monkey mind, how the mind jumps from thought to thought to thought, sometimes 100 or 1,000 in the space of a couple of seconds. And somehow the yoga allows you to find that space and find some peace and calm within. So really, all those four different expressions are just euphemisms for the kind of goals that most of us have when we go to do yoga, and that is providing space, mental and physical space. But it does a lot more than that as well, because it brings a lot of our systems, or hopefully all of our systems, into balance. That's not just the mental, but we're talking muscular, lymphatic, hormonal, joints, everything to do with the body and the mind. If I can draw your attention to the lymphatic system, which in particular with the beautiful deep breathing that we foster in the yoga classes, we're actually getting that mechanical and physical stimulation that we need to actually have a well-functioning lymphatic system. So there is an amazing amount to be gained from embracing a yoga in our lifestyles. And finally, I'd have to say that the other balance that happens is to counter the stresses that we have in a physical way, which then expands to mean that you actually get it in a holistic fashion, and that is the way that you create the balance between your muscles, your flexors and extensors in the body. Because when we're in stress, we tend to curl up, tighten up, use the flexors, and with the body opening up and stretching open and relaxing into it, for example, when we lie down in Shavasana, we're using our extensors to open up the body, then you find that you can actually take that away with you, this beautiful balance that you get, and use it as a metaphor for your whole life.
My word, there was a lot packed in there. It's interesting to hear what you're saying, actually, about the flexors and extensors, because I, you know, always have in my head, when the first time I came across that, the image of somebody jumping for joy, you know, when people are delighted, when they're happy, when they're full of joy, then, you know, what we do is we stretch, and you know, people jump for joy, their arms are out extended, their fingers are outstretched. We don't curl things up, we cramp things up when we're, you know, as you say, when we're stretched. So it's interesting to hear you bring that into this whole concept of a, you know, a yoga practice. And also what I hear in there is that lovely sort of, you know, dichotomy that a yoga practice really ought to be a practice throughout our lives. It's something that we would get up in the morning and naturally do, and that's probably where the origin of the practice itself came from, more than just even the physical nature of the practice from the asanas. And, you know, I hear what you're saying is that by being rigorous about it in the Western world, it meets our needs to have schedules. We tend to work best with schedules, but probably more to the point then, it kind of mandates or ensures that the balance that we strive for is going to be automatically delivered because we've scheduled it in. So it's a little bit paradoxical, but
yes,
it works.
Exactly.
So what was it that brought you to hot yoga specifically? And I'm kind of interested in the hot part of that as well.
Oh, okay. Well, many, many years ago, and I might be showing my age now, but many years ago in high school, I had the wonderful experience of being able to do yoga as a sport in my final year of high school. And it was really a wonderful experience, and I always promised myself to continue my yoga practice. The only problem was I was a bit of a slow starter. It took 17 years to get back to a yoga studio. And it was really only serendipity that I discovered Bikram Hot Yoga. I was on holidays and with you, and I really just needed some space from some emotional stresses in my business life. And I decided to do some yoga, not based on the particular style, but really more on my holiday availability and schedule. So the room that I went to a few times happened to be warm whenever I walked in there, and the woman out, one of the fellow students said, "Oh, there's this group of crazy people that are doing it in the warm room." And that was really all I knew about hot yoga at that stage, the fact that there were crazy people who did yoga in a hot room. So when I returned home after the holidays, I immediately started to look around and make some phone inquiries about the yoga within a vicinity of our house. And what attracted me to the hot yoga was, well, firstly, great customer service from the person who answered the phone. And secondly, she was able to answer all my questions. And secondly, because I wasn't going to be tied to doing a 6-week or a 10-week course on a Tuesday night only. I was really free to go whenever I wanted it. And that was really important to me, that it would fit into my lifestyle. So, yes, another question about lifestyle. So you wanted me to ask you about the heat specifically. In respect of actually choosing the yoga that had the heat, as I said, it was really more about the fact that it had something to do with the fact that I could go all the time. The heat never, ever entered into my decision making, not even when I first started going. I don't remember ever even making a comment about the heat internally or externally for quite some time. It just was. It just was the way it was. And I was just prepared to take that on because I already felt good from the moment I stepped in the room.
So it was more about accessibility then and not having to, you know, sit through a 10-week course or anything like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think also since that time, you'll find that yoga studios all over the world are now offering that availability. It's not just about courses that happen on a certain day or a certain time. You can pretty much go to thousands of studios at any stage to be able to get your yoga fix.
Yes, yoga embraces the drive-in philosophy. So that brings me to then, you know, you stuck with Bikram yoga, and actually I was kind of curious about that. You said, you know, it took you 17 years to get to it, so I guess that makes you about 34. So you only look about 27, which is amazing, and even at 34 you're significantly lying about your age, but I certainly won't ask you to reveal that. Moving right along again, so I'm kind of curious about why you stuck with the Bikram yoga, hot yoga, because it's so different. So what is it that's so different and more impactful than the other styles? And maybe if, you know, as an addendum to that, you could talk to some of the other styles.
Sure. I might start off answering that question by saying that I have done lots of different styles of yoga. Mm-hmm. And there is nothing, bar none, that gives me the satisfaction of going to a Bikram or a hot yoga class, particularly a Bikram class. There's no other style that I would prefer to do, especially when it comes to that inner satisfaction, that inner glow, that feeling of real peace and calm and happiness that I can engender in myself. And I do have to say that I do enjoy other styles of yoga, so I don't mind having a little talk to some of those as well.
Just if I might just interject a moment there as well. You know, I've done also a few different types of yoga, Iyengar, Ashtanga, and some Hatha styles in England as well. And it just blows me away every time. You go back to the hot room, you know, Bikram himself talks about the very specific benefits of you know, of the Bikram class and the way that it attends to so many different aspects scientifically, I believe, of the body. So, you know, I really, really like that. I really like that. Not only is it the feel good factor, but I do feel as if it's, you know, correctly applied to my body, to, you know, the whole function of my internal, external organs.
Absolutely. And going to discuss the difference between the Bikram and the hot yoga styles compared to the other ones, I would say that a really good word to describe the difference between them is the intensity of the experience and the alchemy of the heat, the mirrors and the poses together to create this wonderful energy about it. And all those things together tend to increase the efficiency of your whole system. And what I really like about these series is that because there is a finite number of poses, you get a very quick deepening of the knowledge of the whole series, which then in turn quickens the process of self-discovery. And rather than going to a class that is based on the whim of a teacher, you know, let's do this pose now, or let's do this set of series now, let's do that. You know, instead of doing yoga on an ad hoc basis, or learning poses time after time and never really knowing what's going to happen next, you do nail the fundamentals in a few classes and really get to work on the part of yourself that really matters and that's really going to make a positive difference to your life.
So what do you say then to people who might think, well, isn't there a tendency then to just to fall into a routine with it? I mean, you know, at least if you're always having to learn new yoga poses, it keeps you very present. Is there an extra challenge then within a repetitive series such as Bikram or hot yoga in keeping yourself present and continuing to develop if you know the routine so well?
That is definitely a question of intention and attitude, Robert, because I believe strongly that you can really deepen your work by having the same set of poses every time. Because rather than knowing these poses on a superficial level, you can really understand the huge number of nuances and great distinctions that you can make in every single system of your body in any given moment. So the way I put it is this: you go to class and you know there's a dependability in the environment, the physical environment. You've got the same heat, about the same heat and humidity should give you the right kind of conditions every time. Yes, there are some changes depending on the climate, but you've got the same set of poses and you've got them in the same order. You've got the mirror, you've got the same physical environment, and the only thing that generally changes from time to time is your relationship with them. So it gives you a great opportunity to deepen your practice. There are people who do say, "Oh, but won't I get bored?" And there are a very small number of people who do actually not come back because they say, "I'm bored with the series." And my question that I have internally is, what are they not confronting to be able to get deep enough to be able to experience what so many others are finding magical about the whole experience?
No, exactly. I mean, you and I have been, what, probably 9, nearly 10 years into it.
Yes.
Boring is not what I would describe my class as. In fact, sometimes I wish it was boring. I get into it and go, oh no, this is driving me crazy, this particular pose, or and the monkey mind's going off, and the body's saying, you know what, you don't want to stretch so far today, do you? And then all of a sudden, in another pose, you have a breakthrough, and it's perhaps related to something external, something about my life. So, gosh, it's strange to put boring and a Bikram yoga or a hot yoga class in the same sentence.
Well, actually, even taking some of your words from other conversations that we've had, you tend to use it as a tool sometimes to actually deepen your clarity on certain issues that you're working on outside of the yoga, and they might even be web related. And and the stillness that, well, what I understand is, if you want to talk to that, is that the stillness that you get in your mind from the extraneous thoughts allow you to hone in on certain parts of your own processes and make some decisions based on what you discover there.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it makes it sound as if I'm sort of working during class, and I think what I've learned to do is I compartmentalize a part of my mind in class, and it's a small part, so it's not kind of taking over, but definitely there are times within which I can be in a pose, and all of a sudden it looks a little bit like someone knocking on the door saying, "Ding, ding, ding, got the answer for you," and I can sort of park it, and still stay present. So it's taken me a few years to get to that point, and I'm not saying it's a great thing to always do, because quite clearly what I'm saying is I'm not 100% present, but I'm feeling okay with that because of the outcome that I get from it, which is taking something that is incredibly stressful or difficult decision-making wise, or I haven't yet discovered an answer for. And yes, some of it's related to online programming type things, or a particular marketing strategy, and all of a sudden that just, as you say, because of the space, because of the calmness perhaps, and because of the presence, I'm finding that it's a far more effective and smoother way to go get answers for things.
Well, I'd actually like to encourage anyone who feels that they're beating themselves up a little bit about the fact that they're having extraneous thoughts, that they should just give themselves a little bit of empathy, because none of us are ever going to be able to get through a class without thinking about something else. And that's just the fact. That's just a fact. Everybody has something going on in their heads. And the control that you get in your mind by meditating, by doing this moving meditation or any other meditation practice that you have as part of your life, is to be able to slow down the thoughts enough to be able to have some control over your mind. So don't be upset that you're having some of these thoughts. Be grateful that you can actually slow it down to be able to say, yes, I had a few thoughts in yoga today, not I was bombarded by a million thoughts today.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit like a thought train going past and you can jump on, jump off, you know, and that's the whole sort of allowing the fact that there are going to be those thought trains and there's nothing you can do about that.
Well, speaking of jumping on and off trains, we've gone way off topic. And if you're finished with that train, I'll bring us back onto where we were before.
Shut up, being lateral, will you? Shut up. Sure. Well, tell us a bit about some of the other styles then, and how they do differ.
Okay. Well, the first one that comes to mind that I've done a fair amount of is the Iyengar yoga. And in the Bikram world, it's flippantly referred to as furniture yoga. And that's
not
because
by
of
us.
Its...
We're not that judgmental.
No, we don't. We don't do that. But I just thought I'd share the joke. And it's all about using props, etc., to enhance the poses and the alignment. And that's fine. So it's not important that you use the props. It's important how you use them. And in my mind, they can be used as a bit of a distraction. And because I've found on every single Iyengar class that I've ever attended, for me, there is a constant battle to get a lasting self-connection during class. And what I find is that I'm constantly switching between the internal and the external focus. I'm watching what other people are doing if I don't know the pose, and then I have to come back into myself, and then I have to get up and put the block back or go and get a blanket or whatever it is. And I find that completely confusing for the mind, and it's just keeping it too busy. On the other hand, if you aren't ready for the intensity of self-confrontation, then perhaps styles like this are helpful because the spiritual and the emotional evolution is less concentrated and efficient. Is there anything else you want to ask me about Iyengar, Robert?
No.
Okay. Well, we could move on to Ashtanga yoga, which is actually a set of six series, and most people only ever get to the first or second series, the primary series or the second series. There's no mirror used. It's quite an introspective practice. It's a wonderful, wonderful practice that follows a set pose sequence that I really enjoy building the strength that I can find, strength and flexibility in my major joints, so the wrists, the ankles, the hips, and the shoulders. I really feel very strong after I've done some Ashtanga practice. Some people have referred to it as injury yoga. You do really have to be very careful when choosing the style of yoga. It was initially developed for young, agile, athletic boys. There's no heat in the room, but you do generate that heat through movement, through the flow, the vinyasa flow of the asana. It's a beautiful moving meditation. It's very strong. And what I'd say is because of this strong nature, it precludes a lot of the population from doing it. It's not as accessible to the large number of people that you can get benefiting from a Bikram yoga or a hot yoga class.
Mm-hmm.
So it really appeals to a large number of people, body types, ages, physical capabilities, conditions, diseases. And, you know, I would say that you can get a lot more different types of people, body types, into a Bikram hot yoga room.
Mm.
Yep. There's some other styles that you'd probably be interested in. You've probably heard of power yoga and Baron Baptiste yoga. Mm-hmm. These are often hybrids of Bikram yoga, hot yoga, and Ashtanga yoga, all mixed together. And often they are a set series or a number of set series within each one. So really, I just encourage you to go out and try different styles. You might keep going back to one more particularly because it's more satisfying than the others, but it's really nice to be able to get different movements from different series. And, of course, there are some other styles. There's probably hundreds of other styles, and they're developing right as we speak. There's gentle yoga. There's woga. That's in water. Boga, that's boxing yoga. Never done that one. There's ones that are starting to come into the studios that involve hip-hop or funky music. It's quite amazing. And I actually go to laughter yoga classes every week, which I find immensely fun and really encourages genuine laughter for no reason at all. So go and try that one day. But if, what we're all doing, I guess, is really trying just to strive for some kind of enlightenment, some kind of satisfaction, no matter what you're doing.
Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here because I know there's a particular yoga practice that you like to do on the odd occasion, and you especially like to do it after a 90 minutes of hot yoga, and that's yin yoga. And I wondered if you could just point to that and explain why you think you know, it's also beneficial, and whether it's in fact something that you think people should pursue or not.
Well, everything is choice. And after class, though, when you've had a nice strong class and your body is nice and warm, sometimes it's the most beautiful gift to yourself to be able to get into some long language stretches that last a few minutes. Equally, a lot of studios have yin yoga classes that follow a hot yoga class, so you can actually probably take advantage of that in your own studio if you're lucky enough for that to be there. Yin yoga itself tends to have the aim of targeting deeper connective tissues, mm-hmm. rather than the ones that get stressed in the more muscular, active yang practices of, say, hot, Bikram, Ashtanga, or many of the other power activity series that you may go to. So rather than using a lot of pressure, what you do is you create a tolerable pressure or traction for a long period of time, and that mm-hmm. could be minutes, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and the words that you could use to describe it are long, long holding, slow, and deep. Mm. The time factor is the most critical in yin yoga. You settle into a pose and then you stay there for minutes, and you stay there for a long time to slow the body and mind and safely practice deep stretching where the body opens up. The muscles start to recognize the safety in the stretch and release even more than they do in a yang class. So it's very satisfying. You can actually feel your body surrendering into it. It's wonderful. It's a great addition to a hot yoga practice, and it really balances the yang yoga, the type of yoga that a lot of type A personalities go for, the achievement and completion-driven nature of a hot yoga class. Mm. And it balances with something that has to do with exploration and softness and discovery.
All those wonderful yin things. I remember I've done it a few times myself, and I remember being in the room there with all the – we actually had all the candles lit in the yoga studio there. So quite different to your average power hot or Bikram yoga class, that's for sure. But certainly quite remarkable in the way that it can open up some of those harder to stretch places, especially for me, you know, the hips, for example, or the adductors. It was fabulous for that.
And you don't need the mirrors. You can have some relative darkness in the room, and you only really need to see what you're doing for a couple of moments, and then you can just settle into it and really surrender to the breath and to the body. It's lovely.
So coming back to Bikram yoga, and I sort of alluded to the fact that you've been practicing for quite some time now, and it has had an impact on your life and mine, of course. How do you think Bikram yoga, hot yoga, has changed your life? And the reason I ask this is I'm certain there are things for people who are listening to this right now that they would gain from that, and that they would be encouraged by.
Well, I'd say it's probably affected my life in almost every way, if not every way. And it's helped to satisfy a real deeper yearning for satisfaction, because you've heard me use the word satisfaction. It's probably the best word I can describe the feeling that I have when I've done the yoga, or, you know, when it carries on. You know, when we call having yoga credit, carrying that glow with you through your life. It's wonderful. When we first started yoga, and I guess I can sometimes use the word we, but I'll use I, when I first started, I started becoming very clear about the things that I wanted to happen in my life. And that happened pretty soon after we both started practicing, became clearer about my vision, my motivations, my dreams, my aspirations, and the ability to move forward. Really about nurturing my abundant spirit and the way that I can manifest happiness and create personal, emotional, and wealth abundance in my life and bring that to our family. It really took me away from the very commonplace attitudes that peace and joy and happiness come about when. They come about when I have gone on holidays. They come about when the end of the day comes and I can finish work. It comes about when I have that house that I want. It comes about when I retire or when the kids have finished high school. And it allowed me to really see and understand on a visceral level that you can, that I can be happy right in the given moment. And you might recall this time, I know it was a real watershed moment for us. We were on holidays in Bali and we're sitting on the deck of our room with watching a beautiful sunset and having a discussion about how the yoga has affected our lives. And we said, well, since we want these things out of our lives when we're older and when we retire, and we asked this wonderful question, we said, what's preventing us from having it right now? And we both looked at each other and said, nothing. And that was probably one of the most incredible moments to be able to realize that we could have what we wanted right then. So really, it's the melting of the confusion of the mental state that comes about with a regular and frequent practice. And to find that clarity that helped me pursue a more calm lifestyle. And it allowed me to go away from that experience and make a lot of plans, including making my dream of becoming a yoga teacher come alive. Mm. So many things happened. So I might even say that you might want to ask, where hasn't it changed my life?
It's really something that's affected your whole life in many, many areas and in many, many different ways. So mentally, emotionally, physically, and even sounds to me as if, you know, some of the more purposeful parts, or, you know, what some folks might call spiritual, putting the meaning back into the life, or at least emphasizing the meaning again. So lovely. It's a beautiful encouragement.
I actually just wanted to interject and say there's more to it than that as well. I don't know if you were going to ask me that, but that's on the very deep level, the ones that make those profound changes. And on a kind of a daily level, the things that pop up in front of you on a moment-by-moment basis, the sort of things where I found that I was becoming more and more resilient and resistant to the daily stressors of modern-day life and even modern-day ailments, and common ailments like the cold are just, you know, these things just seem to not be an issue anymore.
They melt away, don't they? Yes.
Definitely. And becoming more emotionally equanimous and not really caring about certain things or the outcome of something, not being attached to whether something happens or not. So not reacting, because my journey had been a lot about reducing my reactivity to certain triggers. So that definitely was something I can actually make a quantifiable assessment on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if I might comment too, that in the first 3 weeks of you going, and which was just around the time I was starting as well, but just from an observational point of view, if there are people out there who are looking to, you know, improve their looks or change their body shape, and I will, you know, hesitate to label it weight loss because that's not a true phenomenon necessarily with yoga. Really what most people are probably after are changes in their body shape. But just in 3 weeks, now I know you went every day, you went 7 times a week, and as did I when
fair,
I started.
Be fair, 6 to 8 times.
so we take an average, 7 times a week. And the thing that I noticed was that your skin glowed. And it was just, it was absolutely remarkable. I can see it now in my mind. It was quite a dramatic change. And also, your shape changed quite dramatically as well.
So, exactly.
So it's quite extraordinary. And you had amazing intention. There's no question. But I think anyone with strong intention and a commitment to go every day for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and, you know, we did it for months on end. It was revolutionary. And I still believe it is and can be for anyone who applies themselves. And I think that's why so many people get caught up in wanting to do a 30-day change or a 60-day challenge, because they know that it's something, it's achievable, it's doable, it's a goal, it's measurable, it kind of has all the Western attributes to it, and yet the benefits that they actually get from it are probably not the Western benefits. I mean, the skin glow, the weight loss, the shape changing, that's all going to come, but as you said, it's that equanimity, the, you know, being able to be happy for no reason at all. I mean, it's just extraordinary.
Absolutely.
Anyway,
it's
we're
got a very nice lyrical transformative effect. Yes.
we're clearly biased.
Yes.
What about, you know, people who are practicing regularly, and, you know, this happens to us all in the Western world especially, crisis hits home, you know, something happens. Maybe we have a relationship issue, or maybe some money problems, or perhaps, you know, things are difficult at work, or, you know, we didn't achieve a goal we wanted to achieve. How does yoga help when crisis mode hits?
Well, for me, I say that that yoga has given me the tools to be much more in touch with my body, where I can trust my intuition and my body's intelligence. So I was already strong on that area when I first started doing the yoga, but it's deepened it to a great degree. So when a crisis hits, I immediately check into my physiological responses. And just to give you a little bit of some specifics there, I often check into an uneasy feeling in my solar plexus or abdomen, and it might even be accompanied by an occasional headache. So that's how I notice whether I'm in internal crisis or conflict, and I know fairly quickly I need to get myself off to class.
Mm-hmm.
And then depending on the break that I've had from yoga, because that won't happen if I'm continually doing a regular and frequent practice, but if I find myself away from yoga for a little while, then I'm pretty much sorted out between one and three classes. So the longer the break, the longer it takes to get that equanimity back. And, you know, you might be away from practice because you've had a cold for a couple of weeks, or maybe you've had a yoga-free holiday.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can't do yoga, what I'll do is I'll get up and I'll move around. I'll stretch my body out. We talked about that physiology before, about how you can create that feeling of inner joy by mimicking that physiology in your body. So I'll do that and move and stretch, open up my body. But if I'm very emotional, I might even get on the floor and do a camel pose and force open my heart center and release some of those emotional crystals. And of course, I'll be even saying to you and to me, I need to get me to the yoga studio.
Heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting to me about that, as well as reading between the lines a bit, I'm guessing that a part of what yoga has brought for you is some greater awareness around using your body as a trigger for needing to explore conflict or crisis, and use yoga as one of the tools for attending to that. So many people, you know, might even be in the stage where they don't notice these things in their body yet. And I know for me, you know, yoga, I mean, I would describe myself probably 10 years ago as, you know, dead from the head down, from the neck down, because, you know, I love all that sort of mental and head stuff. And the yoga has definitely helped me get back in touch with my physical body and my emotional body. And so a lot of people might have been in the same situation as me, and for especially the Bikram series, it is wonderful for opening up those connections again. And then if you're up for it, then you can start tuning into sensations in your body, as you said, like in your solar plexus, or maybe a mild headache or whatever, that then becomes the trigger that says, okay, maybe I'm going to hit crisis mode. In order to help me weather this and be more resilient, I'll go to yoga. In order for me to find or uncover a solution or some kind of strategy that will work, I'll go to yoga. So is that what you're saying?
Yes, it is. And we talked about it before in the meditative aspects of yoga and what actually happens and creating space between the thoughts so that when you have had a trigger that creates a reaction in you, now that you've got the space in your head, you now have the ability to, say, find time in your head and the space in your head to notice the physiological response, to notice whether or not it is a crisis, and then to be able to pause, breathe, relax, and then respond rather than getting into the trigger reaction.
So that's interesting, the negative side of our lifestyles, if you like. You know, we find ourselves in emotional states we prefer not to be in, and often we'll project or blame external things for it. But at the end of the day, really, it's just sensations in our own body. But I know for one, I would rather have happy sensations than stressful ones. We've sort of talked about this a couple of times. Could you explain a bit more about this idea of feeling happy for no reason?
Oh, sure. I use it a lot because this is what a lot of my students have reported back to me. And it's just such a beautiful thing that you can do for yourself, is to be able to create that inner environment where you feel happy. Because true happiness comes from a state of beingness, not having anything external. We touched on that before. Because modern day society conditions you strongly to link happiness to external stimuli, holidays, when you finish work, when you'll be older, when you get, you know, that, you know, when I'll be happy when thing. And we're conditioned to believe that we're not enough and that we need to aspire to all these material things. And then the flip side of that, of course, is that you have a whole industry that's geared towards protecting what we've already had, which is the insurance industry. What will happen if this happens to the things that you've just created in your life materially? So what happens is the yoga actually helps you look inside. And I believe strongly that the yoga is an emotional clearinghouse, and it just allows you to feel better in your own skin. And being receptive to the abundance that the universe has to offer, it lets you link your happiness to the way you feel inside, your joy. And it's not to say that you won't feel grief or sadness, because there is a certain joy in being able to feel the full gamut of emotions as well. And I think that really helps you check into your own sensations, being in touch with your body again.
Okay, so you're sort of saying, you know, it's being happy for no reason is not the same kind of happiness that I might experience, say, when, you know, I hear some good news. That's great, but it's a deeper joy.
Absolutely. Okay. Yoga is a delightful way to get in touch with yourself. It gets helps you get connected to who you are and gain more knowledge about your own inner essence and a deeper spiritual satisfaction.
Wow, so there's so many different reasons for doing the yoga and a lot of benefits that we can get from the yoga, and we've talked a great deal philosophically. What would you say to other people who are today practicing Bikram yoga? What's one thing that you think that they could do to get more out of it today, right now?
Can I give you two things?
If we have to.
All right. I'll be brief. I'll be as brief as I can be. Okay. I think there's two things. One of them would be to treat the whole 90 minutes as your yoga. And it's not a set of poses. It's your yoga. It's your time for self-connection. It's your time to be free of distraction to external stimuli. So you have to do whatever you can to maintain that focus. Sure, you're going to be distracted from time to time. Sure, you're going to realize, oh my God, I just fixed my hair, or I'm looking at the ground, or I'm not looking directly forward, or I'm having too many sips of water. But it's really what you're trying to do is get that 90 minutes of uninterrupted eye time. If you're not doing an asana, you're doing shavasana, which is an asana in and of itself, and it is your secret to success, to have calm and peace and stress-free inner environment. You might recall, Robert, that in Meditation 101, which is available as a free download at hotyogadoctor.com, where I talked about one of the keys there is to treat the whole yoga 90 minutes as your whole yoga class, and to anchor those feelings to the feeling that you have in your final shavasana. And if you can touch the door, for example, as you're walking in, and trigger that relaxation state to feel and access that during your whole class, you'll be able to gain that focus and take it in right through your 90 minutes and really deepen the effects of your meditation. And you can find that has immediate benefit.
A great technique for for people. We often talk about leaving what's happened during the day outside the door, but I really like what you say there, and making that tangible, making it something concrete. You go and you touch the doorknob, or you touch the door, and it becomes your trigger to access as much as you can of what you expect to feel in a shavasana. And from that very second onwards, you are now in your yoga practice, which is really much more along the lines of what yoga is intended to do. It's supposed to be a practice, not a set of physical exercises.
And if just to extend that point for a moment, I've just recently answered a Hot Yoga Doctor forum question about taking water during the class. Thank you, Ray, for your lovely comments. And what he mentions is that often people call that party time, and the mere fact that you call it party time alludes to the fact that the party is going to happen at a particular moment, meaning that you've got a positive spin to your yoga, to your practice of drinking water, and that actually gives you a negative spin or attitude to the way you're experiencing your yoga itself. So rather than calling it party time, just have a drink if you need it, whenever you need it, so long as it's not causing distraction. And that way you can start to create a full 90-minute experience, not truncated by an artificial break where you are ascribing certain feelings or imbuing it with certain values. Anyway, I think the idea of creating a 90-minute class with as little distraction as possible by anchoring to a certain experience like touching the door is a very simple thing to do, but often the most profound changes you can make are by using the most simple techniques. So try that one and see how that affects your ability to deepen your practice.
And I believe you said you had two, so don't hold out on us now.
Okay. The other one is about maintaining a physiology of happiness. You mentioned something before about having a physiological state of opening up the body. And I do believe strongly that you can create this happiness, this physiology of happiness in your body all the time. You learn it in yoga. And that physiology of happiness is about having a nice straight back, dropping the shoulders down and back away from the ears, almost dripping, shoulder blades dripping down your back. You've got a slight external rotation in the arms. Your breastbone is lifted, which also helps drop the shoulders down and back. And your chin is parallel to the floor, maybe even slightly tucked a little bit. And it allows you to have an open chest and breathe life-giving breath into your body, and you can take that with you outside of the studio as well. I mean, you only have to look around you at the people in the street and notice how most people hunch their shoulders down and forward, and you can really see that that's going to make a huge difference, and it really affects the inside as well as the outside of your mental state. So you really do access some physiological happiness. So if you're not even feeling that good, if you access those physiological states of happiness, then you actually start to live that way as well.
Can you actually start to shift all the sort of neurological connections as well?
Thank you for putting it that way.
So your first key is, look at the entire 90 minutes as a yoga practice. So using every second that's not a pose, not an asana, as a shavasana, and we've often talked about being, graceful and deliberate and elegant in moving in and out of poses as well. So I love the fact that you say every second, And then the second key thing is to learn what a physiology of happiness or openness is, what it means. It's likely to be an open chest. It's likely to be the shoulders down and back. I know you have some super secret things we can't talk about coming up, which we'll attend to that in even more detail for people.
Yes, that's coming up soon.
So for those of us who, you know, practice Bikram or hot yoga regularly, then that's possibly easy to understand. What about those who haven't yet started? What would you say to them today?
The two most common reasons why people stop themselves from turning up for the first day, or they actually turn up with these problems, is that they have an ignorance and fear. They're usually scared about the heat, but it's usually as a result of listening to the opinion of someone who almost has no right to have that opinion because they've never even had an experience with the hot yoga in the first place. So my advice, since you're asking for it, would be to approach the yoga without having any judgment at all. It worked for me. expect to feel good after your first class. It is really a great bonus if you feel good during your class, but don't expect to get the whole series after having just attended one class. Allow yourself some time for familiarization with the series itself and to actually physiologically acclimatize to the heat. We've got an article online that would help you understand a little bit more about that at hotyogadoctor.com. But it's also very important that you do go several times in your first 10 to 14 days to be able to physiologically acclimatize and make your heartbeat stronger and to be able to really settle into the heat more comfortably. A really great way of being able to do that is to take advantage of your initial pass. Most studios around the world are going to offer a unlimited class pass that lasts for between 10 days and 3 weeks, 10 and 20 days usually, where you get to go as many times as you like for about the price of one class. So that really is a wonderful way to acclimatize yourself physiologically and to get to know the series, get good value that way. One of the other things that people have problems with going the first time is that they think they're having difficulty breathing in the room, and that's another paradox of the hot yoga. In fact, the humidity and the heat are creating some optimal conditions for lung function, and actually find that they're pretty much overwhelmed with the amount of air that they're getting in, but they react with a bit of anxiousness and close up and not surrender to it. So you actually can actually breathe better in the hot room, and it's sometimes a bit scary to realize that you're actually breathing more deeply. So surrender to that and just keep breathing. And some of you out there will be reticent to start because you may have some condition or disease state that you're not sure whether the yoga is going to help you. It's not a one-size-fits-all kind of mentality, but definitely most people are going to get a lot of benefit out of this practice. So if you have something that you need to address, please go and talk to your teacher, go and see your doctor if you need to, or come and join us at the Hot Yoga Doctor Forum and ask me a curly question. Definitely come talk to somebody and get some rapport with somebody who can understand your condition. It's the last thing I could say about going to the studio for the first time is not to have any unrealistic expectations of yourself. You're doing something new, expect to make some mistakes, and don't feel any pressure to conform to anyone else's standards. So if you're seeing someone doing something wonderful in front of you, use it as a tool to understand what you should look like in the long term, but certainly don't have the unrealistic expectations that that's what you should look like today. You've got two stabs at just about every pose in the series, so if you have to, just watch one set, do the other. If you're too tired, that's another option for you. And just the yoga is what the yoga is. If you can't do it today, it doesn't matter. You've got tomorrow. You'll come back. You'll feel great whether or not you're doing all of the poses.
I might add something to that as well. Actually, you sort of triggered something for me about what happens when you are looking at other people. I know that when you've been practicing a while, it's fairly easy to maintain a poker face. And, you know, it's obviously one of the things that's worth aiming for is not to, you know, make faces in yoga. Because when you're first doing some of the poses, you know, I know I've looked at myself in the mirror going, But actually what you want is to be completely equanimous and just focusing on the breath and the pose, feeling the stretch. You know, you're looking for accuracy and alignment. And that can seem to someone who's just starting as if everyone else is doing it too easy. I mean, you know, really, how comes they've got no anguish on their face? They're not hurting. and it's actually not the case. There are people there who have probably got completely poker faces, and yet they are working absolutely as hard as they possibly can. You just look for the sweat coming off them. You just look for the muscle definition showing up when they're in a pose. So just be aware of that if you're just starting too. It can be a little bit of a, you know, misrepresentation that they're making it look easy and as if they're not working hard. And you might think, well, God, I'm never going to be able to do that. Believe me, it's never an easy class. Physically, it's always a challenge, and that's the wonderful thing about it.
Exactly. Never gets boring.
Okay, so I'm doing Bikram yoga, I'm doing hot yoga, and, you know, and that's great. Is that all I need to do? You know, is that a true thing to say? We've had people who, you know, have given up their gym practice, or people who are using it for cross training who haven't given up other practices. We also have people asking us questions about diet, or, you know, should I change my diet? Should I be meditating as well? So, yeah, is it really true? You know, we've all got to start drinking yak's milk, wearing Afghans, and walking around in moccasins in order to get the best out of our yoga.
No.
Thank goodness for that. Oh, I can give up the yak's milk. Yes.
Look, we talked about accessibility to the understanding that you have choice in everything that you do, and the clarity that you get in the yoga in being able to understand that you have that choice. So I'd say that when you talk about other disciplines and modalities, whatever's going to enrich your life is something that you should explore. You might explore things like massage or Bowen therapy or going to a chiropractor or different styles of yoga concurrently. And that's all going to be part of your path of personal development. And so go ahead and explore that. It's your doorway to discovery. You do talk about yak's milk and vegetarianism. I mean, the fact that we happen to be vegetarian has really had no bearing on our yoga because we were already that way beforehand. But what I would say is that choice comes into it again, because a lot of people think that they're going to go to the yoga because they want to change their shape. Well, specifically, they say they want to lose weight, they want to make some kind of change. And they say, well, what do I need to eat? What do I have to change in my diet? Well, unless you've got a really big problem and you've been battling it for a very long time, you may not need to consciously make any changes to your diet. So yes, the conscious changes may need to be there. You may need to have some rules around what you find is empowering to create those changes. But for the most part, for hundreds and hundreds of students that we've taught or I've taught, I've noticed that in myself as well, that I've been able to make unconscious derived decisions about what I was going to eat. So I was able to, I'm able to go to the fridge and open it up and decide, even though I see chocolate cake in front of me or cheesy pasta, what my body really wants right at this moment is that lovely healthy salad down the bottom. And just that ability to check into your body and say, right, what do you want? And that happens to most students, and they find they just want to eat more healthily. Some students turn up to yoga and they've been smokers, and they find that when they're practicing, they've either given up smoking, they haven't felt like touching a cigarette, or they've completely cut back on it. So there's some real incredible changes that happen. So the conscious decisions may not have to be made. It can be quite a gentle, natural process.
Nice.
Oh, I'd just like to say, yes, in reference to that, we don't like talking about weight change. We like talking about shape change. I think, Robert, you mentioned that before. And I would encourage anybody who does have an issue with their form, their physical form, to throw away the scales right now. Don't use them. Don't look at them. Give them away, throw them away. What you want to do is to start to check into how your body feels, how it feels in your skin and how it feels in your clothes, and that's the best barometer of success.
Yeah, it's I just love the fact that having had a couple of quite long breaks from yoga and sort of reverted a little bit into some eating habits of, you know, let's just say things that were probably going to increase my middle a little bit more, and some pairs of jeans that I bought in order to accommodate my girth. It's going to make it sound like I'm a lardy, but I'm not tubby. But it was just quite bizarre, having always been trim, and suddenly having to purchase things. I thought, oh, I never thought I'd be that waist size, and then within it's like 5 weeks of you know, hardcore getting down to it, doing an average of only four a week, all of a sudden they're too loose.
Yes.
And the jeans that I couldn't fit back into are now comfortable. And so it does happen fast. And I bet you my weight did not change by 1 gram. Well, actually, I probably did lose a couple of kilos, but it wouldn't have been as dramatic as the difference in my dress size.
Your dress size?
Yes. And we're not talking about that on this call, okay?
Okay. So just to wrap that question up, I'd have to say that the yoga is a holistic approach. It's an all-encompassing approach, and it really does enhance and enrich your life by creating a lot of balance in your physical and mental state and your emotional state. You have aerobic exercise, cardiovascular exercise, you've got enhanced waste removal, you've got enhanced peripheral circulation, you've got lymphatic stimulation. It's amazing that many people just drop their other fitness regimes just so that they can really capitalize on what the yoga is doing for them in a holistic sense. So you're asking me if it's all you need? Well, that's also going to be lifestyle dependent, because, for example, if you're an athlete, you might find that you do need to do a bit of cross training. But if you're doing several modalities, several types of sports, many people have experienced that they get so much satisfaction out of this yoga that they drop their other sports just to come and get the all-rounded practice and exercise with the Bikram or the hot yoga. And, of course, the other holistic consideration is the meditative effects that you get.
So we could actually say then, let them eat cake and do their yoga too.
Ah.
Okay, there are some differences, though, in terms of how you know, people can improve their classes and the kind of quality they can get from a class. And, you know, we're fairly passionate about exposing our students to the best possible quality of instruction, circumstance, condition, understanding, you know, the most we can about them, and giving them the most beneficial personal coaching, even during a busy class. What do you think people should be looking for in a, you know, what comprises a good Bikram yoga, good hot yoga class?
Well, first of all, the quality of teaching should not be dependent on the number of people in the classroom.
Right.
I don't care if you've got 90 people or 9, everyone should be getting a top quality experience, and that is going to rely on some very good skills of your teacher.
So it's no mean feat, is it?
It's not.
You know, when you've got 50 people in the room, 90 people in the room, it's a challenge to be able to see what's going on, let alone attend to it.
Yes, exactly. You really need to be able to track multi-skill levels, abilities, conditions, and disease states, and sore necks, and this knee and that knee. And you need to know your students to a fair degree. You're also relying on your student to be able to alert you to any problem on their way in, hopefully not in the last second. But even during the class, to be able to put their hand up and say, "I've got a knee problem." At some stage, you need to take some responsibility for the fact that your input could have an effect on the quality of your class as well.
Can I just interrupt? Sorry, I didn't want to leave the impression that we were kind of okay with big class sizes, because I know you and I are actually, and it's commercially difficult because, you know, there's a financial incentive to run a large size class. Mm. But in my personal experience, I don't really like them when they're more than about 35 or so people. I find that, you know, it just seems to be that, you know, that around that sort of, I suppose maybe it's related to, you know, size of school classes, maybe, you know, we're comfortable in those sort of environments. What's your view on class size?
I think up to 40 people is gives a really nice energy in the class, and beyond that, it can be harder to track things and to give everybody their optimal experience to facilitate that. But anywhere down from that is perfectly handleable. And bigger than that, you get lost in the room a little bit. And I want, when I'm a student, I want to be facilitated as well, so I want to be seen if I'm doing anything wrong or need correction. I want that to be taken note of, so
no matter how advanced or regular you are.
Exactly. So what I would look for in a teacher when I go to, you know, get a good quality class would be someone who is not using a script. Rote learned dialogue. I want someone to teach me, not blurt out a whole list of words that they've learnt off by heart.
Right, but isn't that the way that the training is aimed at? So what you're saying is you want people who have come out of, we're talking Bikram specific, you want people who have come out of that and then learn to, you know, incorporate it in themselves as a person as opposed to just recitation.
Absolutely. Personalise it as well. Being able to personalise it so they're not just... Look, otherwise, I just put a CD on.
Yes.
I want to be coached. I want them to coach the class. I want them to recognise the individual. I want them to have compassion and empathy for everybody in the room. And if you're just reciting a dialogue, there's not much room in there for having that care and attention on everybody. So that's really important to me. I don't want to hear the same dialogue every single class as well. And I actually, that's when I find the class gets boring, if I'm hearing the same words every single class. And the other thing that I have a particular bugbear about is when a teacher is very dogmatic and forceful. You can teach with compassion and get the most out of your students, or you can force them into doing something and they'll look like they're acquiescing, they'll look like they're doing it, but there's resistance in them. There's physiological and emotional resistance and mental resistance to doing everything you say when you tell them they can and can't do certain things in the room. And that might be as simple as not allowing them to have a drink at a certain time, or you want that particular person to stand in this particular part of the room. Everybody should be able to experience and exercise free will and free choice within their yoga class, not so that it distracts others, but so that they can be the master of their own destiny. And part of those three or four things that I mentioned together will help you gain some deeper self-awareness so that you don't go beyond your limitations, so that you've got the awareness to check into the discomfort, make sure you don't go past that discomfort into pain or excruciating pain or to riskful or damaging positions, and so that you don't struggle in your class in any shape or form.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if you're experiencing some discomfort or even bordering on pain in the lower back, and the teacher is saying, "Come down and push, come down and push, come down and push," then it might be advisable to tune into your own body sensations. So, you know what? I'm feeling a stretch right now, and there's no need to go further.
I'm all right with that.
Yes, I'm good with my current level of pain. Thank you.
Yes, exactly. And if you continue to ignore your body's voice, then you can put yourself into a risky situation. So all the conditions around a good class are going to facilitate that and empower you to make the right decisions.
I know when we've been coaching our own teachers, and you know, regardless of where they've come from and how experienced they are, we did like to be sure that the students in our own studio were getting the best possible quality of instruction. So no matter who they were, we always gave coaching feedback and you know, did our best to help them improve their own classes. And we would often make the distinction between using words like pain versus intense stretching discomfort. Because everyone has, a pain is such a packed word, everyone has a different experience of it. So if you say, you know, go to where you're finding some pain, then, you know, for someone who doesn't necessarily, you know, associate with their body terribly much, they may be going past where is useful.
Yes.
So, you know, better to describe it in more objective terms, such as, and it's obviously still is an adjective, but intense discomfort to me seems as if it's more appropriate.
Yes, exactly. I don't think the word pain should be used in when it's describing how you should feel in a pose. Thank you for that.
Now, obviously we've been going for quite a while, and hopefully there's been plenty in here for folks to pick up on. And, you know, I don't really want to finish on talking about pain. It might be a good place to finish, might be somewhere that's more inspirational, which is, you know, that whole, dare we say it, new agey, woo-woo, you know, spiritual side of yoga. And, you know, it does get confused a bit by people with the religious aspects of, you know, Buddhism, Hinduism, whatever. I know you and I believe that there are, you know, the yoga has a great spirit to it, and it can enhance what we feel spiritually, perhaps, but it's not necessary. Can you talk a bit to that? And, you know, perhaps for anyone who's fearful out there that they're going to be drawn into some, you know, cultist religion if they go to yoga?
Well, it's a very common thought, actually, because an aspect of personal development that a lot of people are scared of is the concept of spirituality, particularly because it's really hard to define it. And a lot of people make an equivalence between religion and spirituality, so they often relate the two, and so they say, well, I'm not religious, or I don't want that forced down my throat. Perhaps it's more useful to use a definition of spirituality as the quest for living life with a purpose, a universal search for meaning, to find validation for your or a reason for existence. And you know what? Yoga can connect you with all of that. It helps you find the peace within to help you get in touch with your spiritual nature, and it doesn't have anything to do with your religion. To get to the religious side of things, yoga often has the reputation of linking itself with a lot of the esoteric Eastern philosophies. And we've actually made a conscious decision to steer away from that in our studio, as have a lot of other yoga studios as well, I'd have to say. We don't push that barrow at all, because we like to respect the fact that everyone has their own faith. And in this way, we can make the yoga accessible to everybody and allow them to deepen their own faith and their own sense of spirituality, simply by moving their body, practicing yoga, and accessing their inner self.
So you can have whatever sort of faith or, you know, religious views you wish, and still go along to a Bikram or a hot yoga class and have it do nothing other than deepen your connection with your faith.
Exactly.
Wonderful.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Well, to me, it sounds as if that's a good place to finish up.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. And we might just remind people where they can go to get more resources like this. So hotyogadoctor.com, hotyogadoctor.com, or quickfityoga, That's quick, quickyogafityoga.com. Both of those sites are packed full of information, and the hotyogadoctor.com has a thriving community forum in there that I got to tell you that Gabrielle sometimes is is frantically answering questions to and keeping up to date with, and boy, does she do a great job. So thanks a lot, Gabrielle, for what you're bringing to people there. And it's all for free. You don't have to pay for anything there, as you didn't pay for this either, and that's our commitment to you guys, is bringing you hopefully resources that you enjoy and that make a difference to your daily yoga practice. So with that, that is a good night from me and a goodbye from Gabrielle. Gabrielle, anything you'd like to leave people with?
I just wish that people are able to access that part of themselves that feels empowered and enriched by doing the yoga, and really appreciate this opportunity to talk. So thank you very much, and namaste.
Namaste, and more soon.
Yes, until soon. Okay. Bye.
Bye.